From theheart.org radio, you are listening to Click and Rub with Drs. Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein.
Well, hello, this is Eric Topol with Paul Tierstein for our third episode of Click and Rub. And this time we're dedicated to talking about percutaneous aortic valve procedures. Of course,
Eric, I thought you said this was going to be funny to do. We could make the, what's funny about aortic valve disease?
Well, you know what I think about is that you got this big harpoon that you're putting in the leg, and then you're going to somehow magically position this stent valve. This seems like a little bit barbaric procedure.
Barbaric.
Or you go right through the apex of the heart.
Like the movie Pulp Fiction, you mean? Is that what
you're
thinking about?
Yeah,
it's not like that at all. Why don't you come down when we're doing the procedure?
No, I've seen these procedures. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to do one.
I love doing them. I'm addicted to
it. Are you serious?
I absolutely love doing this.
Why?
First of all, it's not a harpoon.
How big is that?
Well, you have to make sure that the patient has a big enough.
That's not the question I asked.
It's about 24 French.
24 French?
But it's going to get smaller. This is. Remember when we first started PCI before I was born? We were using these 9 French, large, even larger guy
catheters. It's a harpoon.
And it'll get smaller. It's already gotten smaller.
I know, but why do you love this procedure?
Well, first of all, if you're an interventionalist, one of the things you like to do is get better. You like to learn, and you like to be on a learning, steep part of the learning curve. It reminds me of being a fellow or just after your fellowship when you're on that steep part. Every case I learn from, and it's exhilarating. And when it goes well,
they can die in this procedure.
Well,
they do die.
So but the patients we're treating, if we don't treat them, they will die.
Okay.
That's
legitimate,
that's,
but it's different when they're dying in your hands.
Yeah, but that's something that's part of the job, and you try to not have them die, obviously.
Oh, I understand.
Or have a complication.
I totally understand. I'm with you.
And these procedures go well most of the time. I mean, I have to say, it's one of the more exhilarating things I've done in my career in the last 10 years.
Really?
And plus, you can really get better at it.
Why is that?
Because there are a lot of details when you do the procedure. A lot of small little things, 1,000 little things that will work together to have a great outcome, and it takes a while to learn how to do it. And
all right, so let's say you get all those details, mm-hmm. you get this harpoon down from 24 to, let's say it's down
18
to
18 French.
Okay, it's going to have
to 14 eventually, but
14, 12,
fine.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Is this going to be the way in the future we do all aortic valve replacement?
Absolutely, and not every one of them, but it will be the majority of it. The projections are that in 2012, which is not that far from now.
No, it isn't.
It's going to be some 90-something percent of aortic valves. That's, I think, transformational. Because these patients are old, and there's a lot of comorbidities. And when this works well, which it usually does, it is dramatic. I think you made some reference a few minutes ago to, Houdini Act. It is a magic trick. It's just like magic, because the patients come back, and they feel terrific, and they've had very little morbidity during the procedure, and they've been out of the hospital in 2 or 3 days, and they're running around. They tell me, they say, let me speak to your next patients. I want to tell them how great this is. I mean, it's pretty rewarding.
Yeah, well, it's surprising to me. There's a lot of action going on in the aortic valve and aorta, and there's not more of a problem with stroke. It's mm-hmm. actually surprising. And, of course, we know that's a big problem on the surgical side. But there has been a problem, of course, with bleeding. How are you going to deal with that? I guess one of the things, as you say, is miniaturization.
Yeah.
But do you think it requires a vascular surgeon to do the cut down? And
we work with our vascular surgeons because it's great collaboration. I'm learning a lot from them. They've had a lot of experience. In our particular hospital, I haven't been doing the AAA repairs, the stent grafts, and they have. And they have got a lot of experience with these large diameter sheaths because it's a large diameter sheath for that as well. Mm. I'm working with them largely because the patients benefit from their experience and I benefit from their experience. When it gets down to 18 French, it's going to be percutaneous.
Okay.
It's percutaneous, even at these large sheets, it's percutaneous in several labs in the United States and in Europe already, but it'll be a more uniform.
Well, you're big on equipoise.
Yes.
Do you think that there should still be randomized trials or we should just start doing this on an open basis?
No, the evidence base that's being brought to this field is actually, that's why I said there's nothing funny about this. The evidence base is tremendous. It's actually sobering when you realize how much effort, sweat it's taking to get this. We've been working with the Edwards valve to get this through the FDA approval process and to really prove that it's helping patients. We're randomizing well over 1,000 patients the cost, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's 100 million, 150 million. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's twice. And the amount of people involved, dedication of the people involved. You know that every patient that I want to enter in this trial, I have to present to on a telephone conference, which is held twice a week, and which are great learning exercises, sponsored again by Edwards. They host this conference, and we have a lot of experienced interventionalists and surgeons on the call.
Yeah.
And we have to present the case, and we have to show CT angios, we have to show the echoes, and we talk about the clinical history, and we talk about potential problems and pitfalls. So there's a lot of learning going on. It's actually a great way to roll this technology out. I'm really in awe of the people who have
I'm impressed with all this extra layers of, you know, kind of QC of how it all gets done.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to one last point, and that's the one that this is a thrill for you.
Yeah.
You really enjoy it. But
you want to come down and do one? I'll put your name on the protocol.
No, really. I don't. Aren't you at all intimidated or scared about what can happen when you deploy this valve and you're just off by whatever, you know?
No, you don't get scared. What you do is get focused, really focused with this. That's what's exciting about it. You get focused to the whole procedure, and this doesn't necessarily have to be a long procedure. Often it's you know, 40 minutes. But you are just, you know, you're laser focused on putting the sheath in and then getting the valve in the right place. I found that that's the easier part of it. You have to get it in the right place, and you don't deploy it till it's there. We also overdrive pace the ventricle so it's not moving around. And
you never had one where you had to deploy it in the wrong place just because the procedure is kind of aborted?
No, we've had one embolize that I had to deploy in the aorta, and actually it was no problem. Actually, it was actually much easier than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
And the patient ended up doing great.
All right.
So I think that you accurately put your finger on the biggest issue is access, whether it be transapical or the transfemoral, and getting the sheath size down. And that'll happen very quickly. In the first quarter of 2010, it'll be in the trial, we think. This procedure is off and running. The mitral space, not so great.
Oh, that's a different matter. We'll save that for a new click and rub. But so last point, do you chase ambulances? Do you love the drama of excitement of...
Personally, I mean, I don't... chase ambulances. That sounds bad.
Well, I don't mean that, but if you saw a fire truck, would you follow it or would you go the other way?
If it was like on my block, I'd follow it to make sure it wasn't my house.
Not all interventionalists are so, you know, hungry for excitement and drama like this. This is drama.
It is very, it's true.
You know,
it is a dramatic
thing. I never like that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that a lot of interventionalists like it. You feel like it makes a difference, what you're doing.
It's
very
great.
Positive. You get a lot of rewards very quickly. It's, you know, when it works out, when it usually does, you feel great. Positive feedback, it's nice. You know, we're helping patients. That's the point, right?
Well, that's the bottom line. Yeah. Well, that's a great discussion. Great to get your insights, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Click and Rub with Drs. Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein on the Heart.org radio, sharing ideas and opinions with the cardiology community worldwide. Find out more on theheart.org.